Movie News, your weekly source for film headlines, previews, and reviews, all in glorious podcast form. I'm Chris.
And I'm Fox. And with us, as always, we have fellow Geek Scholars Jill.
Hello, everyone.
And Lauren.
Hi, guys. Welcome to episode 110.
Why, thank you.
This week we've got the first trailer for Wes Anderson's The Grand Budapest Hotel, an offbeat comedy with an incredible cast. We have our first installment of Geek Scholars Movie News Trivia, where listeners can call in to try out their film acumen, which
That's
will be
fun.
A fun new segment.
I'm very excited about
and
this.
And loads of casting rumors from various projects, including Jurassic Park 4, now known as Jurassic World, and Fifty Shades of Grey. But we're going
to
begin with the big rumor, which I say with complete irony, as we talk about who will play the lead for Marvel's Ant-Man. Edgar Wright, the genius who brought us Shaun of the Dead, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and most recently, The World's End, lobbied for years to get his vision of an Ant-Man movie made, and now it's set to kick off Phase 3 of Marvel's Cinematic Universe, debuting a few months after the second Avenger movie, Age of Ultron. So this has left many wondering what big-name actor would take the part of Ant-Man,
yeah.
And it sounds like we're down to two people, potentially. We're looking at Paul Rudd and friend of the show, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I do want to note that Gordon-Levitt has, of course, denied the rumor, both of being Ant-Man and of being a friend of our show. But the original story appeared in Variety, and they haven't retracted it yet. So those are just some things I want to keep in mind.
It was not a very robust denial from Gordon-Levitt, I'll have to say.
True. Before we talk about the pros and cons of those two actors, let's very, very quickly have a refresher course on exactly who Ant-Man is. Fox, can you fill us in?
Sure. Several different people have donned the Ant-Man costume and become Ant-Man in the comic books, but most often we think of him as being Henry Hank Pym. Hank Pym is one of the smartest people within the Marvel continuum, up there with the likes of people like Tony Stark and Reed Richards, who we talked about last week. He has a PhD in biochemistry, but he's also very good at things like quantum physics, molecular chemistry,
naturally.
And also entomology, which is the study of insects, which apparently you need to have if you're going to don this costume. Like I said, several other people have also been Ant-Man or called themselves Ant-Man. Most prominently, Scott Lang, who started out as a burglar and stole Hank Pym's costume and sort of used it to seduce women and rob banks and do things like that. But eventually turned from bad to good after Hank Pym sort of hung up his helmet, so to speak.
Do you think you could go into Fox a little bit into his personality?
Sure. He's portrayed in very different ways, very oftentimes fragile emotionally, might be a good way of saying. He's had some issues with relationships where he's been maybe a little too aggressive.
That's putting it lightly.
Yeah, it is putting it lightly. It's a family-friendly show. He's not someone who's very stable. If you think Tony Stark sort of has issues with his emotions and controlling whether or not he's a superhero or a scientist or an engineer, imagine that times 10 for Hank Pym.
Yeah.
Okay, let's break down the pros and cons of each of these two choices for actor. Let's start with Paul Rudd. What do you think, Chris?
I actually like Paul Rudd a lot. I think Paul Rudd is a guy who can play unstable really well. I actually buy that he could be a really smart, really troubled dude. And I also think that it would be fun to see Paul Rudd in more of an action role. I can't think of a single time that I've seen that, but to see him don a superhero costume as that
Anchorman? Oh, no.
see him throw on that costume and actually go after some bad guys, I think it would be a really good time.
Okay, so that's the wrong answer. Who is with me in thinking that Paul Rudd can and will never be a superhero? Jill? Fox?
I'll go with you.
All
here,
right,
Lauren.
Thank you.
There's a couple of hiccups I see. Paul Rudd is not maybe someone who strikes me as so intelligent. I think that's going to be well put. He's more, I don't know, a lovable jerk.
Yeah,
kind of
doofy,
in most of his movies.
Isn't that kind of Ant-Man, though?
I mean, maybe, but I think also Ant-Man is very intelligent, and I don't know how really funny Ant-Man is.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. You know, I think of Paul Rudd being someone who is more of the Tony Stark sort of sarcastic persona than, say, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I personally would pick JGL for this if I had to choose between these two people. I actually kind of like that. I think of Joseph Gordon-Levitt as being...
Wouldn't you pick him for?
Right, that's true. He should play everything. But I also think that what's something that Joseph Gordon-Levitt could bring the role is I like that he's a little bit smaller in stature and may have an inferiority complex because of that, especially compared to people like Steve Rogers, who's enormous, mm-hmm. you know, he's been bulked up and things of that nature. I think he would bring, he also plays smart really well. We saw that in Inception. I think he could bring that to this role pretty easily.
I had a little bit of a hard time imagining Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing sort of the darker aspects of Ant-Man. Do you know what I mean, Chris? Like some of the things that he does that are maybe not so
good.
No,
I agree completely. Yeah, I think one more concern maybe with Joseph Gordon-Levitt taking it over is that particularly with his new movie, Don John, we know that he's much more interested in taking on the role of a writer-director. And I think Pam was an interesting enough character. I would love to see him come back in several future movies. There's a lot of material to cover there. And I don't know that Joseph Gordon-Levitt would be as willing to do that as somebody like Paul Rudd.
It's a commitment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wonder if Joseph Gordon-Levitt is moving into the realm of actors like Matt Damon and like Leonardo DiCaprio. Almost see superhero movies as being beneath them at this point. Maybe not, but
would you really think our idiot brother is going to play the dark and brooding aspects of this character particularly well?
I actually think he's the front runner. I would rather Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but if you asked me to wager, I would say it's more likely that Paul Rudd gets the role.
I agree. I'm not sure that that's how it should be, but really this is all up to Edgar Wright.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. So what I think is also important to consider is that coming from Edgar Wright, what is he going to bring this project that might influence casting?
I'll tell you, the most important thing for me is just a passion for this material. This is a lesser known superhero, and for whatever reason, Edgar Wright has really latched onto it and has a clear vision for what he wants this to be.
For years now. I mean, he did his own test footage, which is now infamous, which got him to do the project.
Mm-hmm. He's someone who I think likes to have a message with his movies, and I'll be really curious as to what he does with this. How does he boil down Ant-Man's character?
Well, we do know a decision should be coming soon, since we know pre-production has begun, filming should start early in 2014, and the current release date is set at July 31st, 2015. So we'll move next to another franchise ripe with casting rumors, Jurassic Park. The upcoming fourth installment of the series will be called Jurassic World, and a few people are attached in various capacities. To start, we know that Ty Simpkins will play one of the leads, and a lot of people might recognize him as the 12-year-old actor from Insidious, but also the young boy in Iron Man 3 who befriends and helps Tony Stark.
He was really good in that.
Yeah, let's start with him, because he's the only actor fully confirmed at this point. Fox, what do you think about this choice?
Well, here's the first thing I want to mention. I think it's odd that the Jurassic Park movies always feel like they need to employ children in peril. We've seen this in all three of the movies so far, and it seems to be a continuous theme that they seem to be going with. Now, to be fair, if I have to have a child in peril, you think you could do a lot worse than Tyson, because like you said, Chris, I thought he did a very good job holding his own against the great Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. And if you could stand toe-to-toe with him and be sarcastic and be funny and be interesting, there's probably not a situation you're not equipped to handle, even dinosaurs.
Do you think this is the movie that the children get eaten?
No.
Not
no,
a chance.
Although you'll constantly, like every other movie, be wishing for it.
Not everyone.
I'm actually a little bit surprised to hear you say that, Fox, because I thought I recalled you saying before that you really missed, from that first movie, the atmosphere of it being an actual theme park where families are going to come and visit and those families can be put in peril. So what's with the change of heart here?
It's not a change of heart about the location. I just don't need you can have a family
adult
atmosphere.
Theme park. Children. No, okay. No children.
21 and over. We're serving beer. You're doing shots off raptors' backs. It's great. You know, can you get body shots off a T-Rex? It's not that I don't want to have the location to be a family theme park. I just don't know that I need the family to be the ones that we focus on in terms of characters.
All right. Fair enough. Well, some bigger names are circling roles as well, like Bryce Dallas Howard, who's one of the leads in The Help, and Josh Brolin from No Country for Old Men and True Grit. Any thoughts about what capacity they might be participating in this movie or not?
It's funny because it's really a complete guess at this point. I mean, we have no idea what this story's going to be. One would presume that if Josh Brolin is going to be in it, that he's going to be a lead or a leadish person.
Right, right.
Do you think he'll be a scientist?
I think they call the leadish people supporting actors.
Well, yeah. What I think is curious to know, and I'm what I'd like to hear everyone's opinion on, is do we think Josh Brolin is the Alan Grant parallel in this movie? Is he going to be some sort of archaeologist, paleontologist?
It just seems like he'd be wearing some sort of safari clothing. Like, that just seems like natural.
Some sort of fedora. No, I agree. I can totally see him more as the animal control specialist with the long-range rifle saying, clever girl.
He's particularly scientist-y.
Is he Muldoon's son, like Alpha Revenge?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what we're going with here?
Well, it's funny that you'd say that, because that was my thought when Jake Johnson is another name that's come up.
Yeah.
He's in New Girl, and actually he was in Safety Not Guaranteed with Colin Trevorrow, which was his last movie. And when, as soon as they started talking about him, I thought, man, that sounds just like, he's someone who could play Jeff Goldblum's character.
In Malcolm. Yeah.
He's kind of that innately goofy, funny kind of character. There's got to be some comic relief. Yeah. And if he's in
Not
it, he's going to be
lovable
it.
As lovable as
Jeff
Goldblum.
Well, it makes
Goldblum.
You wonder, are they doing, lovable? Like, are they really? Basically just doing all the characters over again?
Yes.
Yeah. It seems like we may be shaping up for somewhat of a kind repeat of the original. But there are some other not as well known, but solid actors in negotiation along with Jake Johnson, like Nick Robinson, who was in the indie comedy Kings of Summer this year.
Which I screened and I thought was exceptional. It seems like this has been a year of teenage coming of age stories. We've seen it in Mud. I just saw it in, again, Kings of Summer. I watched The Way, Way Back. All of these had this sort of the Spectacular Now.
Absolutely.
Nick Robinson actually stood out as someone who portrayed a teen accurately and did a good job as being someone who felt like they're on the verge of manhood. And from what I've heard, he would play the older brother to Ty Simpkins.
That would make perfect sense.
Exactly. I could really see that going well. And Nick Robinson is sort of being, again, on that verge of being a leader, but also being scared. He did that really well in Kings of Summer. I could see him bringing those skills into Jurassic World.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if people don't know him, he is 18 years old. So that's exactly
this would be
right
about
age.
Right.
Yeah. So the last thing we are left to speculate on, really, is the title we've been given, Jurassic World. Thoughts on this, Fox?
Yeah, I'll start this one off. A long time ago, we talked about the fourth Jurassic Park movie, and I said what I really wanted to see was them go back to Isla Nublar and have another park like we talked about earlier, Chris. And from my indications of this title, I think that's what we're going to get. I think they're going to go – what I think they're going to see is a new theme park built upon the foundations of the original one and something going horribly awry like it always does. I'm not a huge fan of the title. It's better than Jurassic Land or, you know, something of that caliber. I don't know that Jurassic Park 4 wouldn't have just been fine, but I don't know if this is that much better.
Jurassic World makes me think that maybe the dinosaurs have taken over and formed their own government, and now they've...
Well, it's funny you say it, Chris. We're working towards Planet of the Apes, aren't we? They used a piece of test footage to sell this project where they showed these pterodactyls, and it looked kind of like a continuation of the ending credits from the first movie. The pterodactyls are floating sort of gracefully over the ocean, and then they attack a surfer on a populated beach. And so it makes you think that in this environment, at least from the test footage, and we have no indication that this will actually be in the movie, that the dinosaurs have broken free of their island constraints.
Yeah.
Would that make this potentially more of a standard disaster movie, like an Alien Invader or a Godzilla kind of thing, except with T-Rexes instead?
I hope not. I think the controlled environment is what makes it scary and what makes it interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll have to follow that project and stay tuned to what happens next. But we have even more casting to discuss. With a completely different project. Somehow, we've yet to talk about the 50 Shades of Grey adaptation.
I don't know how we haven't done that. Someone who's writing the script
just made it into the script.
Somehow, whoever's doing those scripts needs to get on that.
But there was drama with the production this week, as right before shooting, the lead, Charlie Hunnam, who is on Sons of Anarchy and starred in Pacific Rim, suddenly dropped out.
And right before shoot, weren't they supposed to start in a week, Lauren?
One or two weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah. So, Jill, if you could, start us off with a quick synopsis of the
Please,
book, just to bring everyone up to speed.
Okay.
Family-friendly show.
Thanks so much, Lauren. So, this is a rather sexually explicit novel about the romance between a college recent graduate and a really wealthy young entrepreneur, I think, to start. And if you imagine the virginal heroine who falls in love for a bondage-loving billionaire, millionaire, that's essentially the story. I think this helps put some context here. It actually started as fan fiction, kind of an erotic telling of the retelling of the Twilight series. And so if you can think about what you know about the Twilight series and take that as a jumping off point, it's essentially what we're talking about.
So Twilight, just kick it up a notch or two or ten.
Yeah, and this book, I mean, I think everybody knows, just sold like gangbusters. I mean, something like over 70 million copies. I mean, while no one will admit to having read it, pretty much everybody's read it.
Okay, so Fox, Hunnam said he left the project because his schedule was too tight. Mm-hmm. Why is that such a big deal?
Because it's not true. There's no way that's the reason. actors plan...
To put it bluntly.
The actors and agents plan these things out years in advance. So you know mm-hmm. exactly how long a project's yeah. going to last, when you're going to jump, and when you're going to do this or that. So there's no way that's the real reason, which makes you wonder, what is the real reason? And I think it's a couple different things. I've heard reports that, one, Hunnam got a lot of backlash from the internet community, saying that he was totally wrong for this role. And some people speculate that it kind of got to him after a while. Yeah. It's kind of like the Ben Affleck syndrome, where everyone was saying you shouldn't be Batman. It got to his head, and he decided to drop out. The other side of the coin is that some people say that Hunnam felt uncomfortable with the script and offered some rewrites. And the producers were like, "Who do you think you are? And we'll just kick you out.
What do you think this movie's about?"
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's further a big deal because, as Jill indicated, this movie's about to film, and the reason it's about to film is because it really wants to get into 2014. And the reason why that's a big deal is because 2015 is just so overcrowded. You got Star Wars, you got Avengers 2, you have this Jurassic World we're talking about. I mean, so many big blockbuster films that a lot of the smaller films that think they can make a lot of money are trying to squeeze into 2014 because they will have a lot less competition. So it's really important this film does not get delayed.
Interesting. Okay, so now the movie needs a replacement. And it sounds like Alexander Skarsgård from True Blood. Jamie Dornan from The Fall. Scott Eastwood from Chicago Fire. And even Theo James, who will play Four in Divergent, are all under consideration. Do any of these actors stand out to you as a good fit? Anyone? Bueller?
What do you think? You got some hotness for.
I got some opinions.
I saw how you got a little flush there for Skarsgård.
I think Alexander Skarsgård is a great fit. And I think maybe Hunnam might have had some concerns about being typecast and taking this on his first major role, not being taken seriously as an actor, et cetera, et cetera. See Twilight series. Alexander Skarsgård, I'm betting, has none of those concerns.
No, he's got no qualms.
Because he's already typecast in exactly this way.
You're already a sex symbol.
Riding that pony. Yep.
That's awesome.
You know, it's funny. Alexander Skarsgård is a little bit older than these other guys, but a couple of these names, particularly Jamie Dornan and Scott Eastwood, to me just seem like they're slightly younger versions of Joe Manganiello, who I think would be...
also a great pick.
Yeah.
From True Blood.
Exactly right.
Old, though. Chris, I'm surprised you didn't comment on Theo James. You know, he looks like he's going to be really good in the young adult movie
Divergent.
Sorry, I was going to say Four. He's playing Four in Divergent. How do you feel about him in this role? Because I know you're really happy about that casting.
I'm fairly happy. I am not super familiar with his previous work. I'm mostly just really excited for, in general, the strength of Divergent.
Okay.
It would be kind of an odd choice, I think, to go from Divergent to Fifty Shades of Grey. And I can understand why he wouldn't want to make that leap or consider it necessarily a leap forward. You also have to consider that whoever is going to be in this role, one way or another, is going to live with this for the rest of their life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's why I actually think that it's going to be a little harder to get a younger actor to play this part. So the character is in his late 20s, and it's, you're talking about people who maybe haven't built careers for themselves, and this is a could be a very defining role, and maybe not in the way they want it to be. I actually think that's something that maybe would make this easier for Alexander Skarsgård, who's in his late 30s.
Yeah, I do wonder, of the four options that seem to have come to the surface, I do think, apart from Alexander Skarsgård, Theo James is maybe the other best pick.
That's what I think.
Because he's British. I think you can kind of come across the pond and do silly stuff and get away with it and then go back home and still be taken seriously.
I don't know.
Alexander Skarsgård is actually not an American actor either, originally.
Right.
Yeah. So he's some sort of Scandinavian. I don't remember.
Doesn't matter, apparently.
But I think you can kind of do that as an international actor.
Robert Pattinson.
Fox, what do you think?
Wait. Well, Robert Pattinson, I mean, he was this up-and-comer who was in Harry Potter originally, and now he did Twilight. He's not been able to get out of that shadow. So I understand where Charlie Hunnam, he just did Pacific Rim, and I mean, I know it didn't do well in the States, but a lot of people thought he did a pretty good job as an action hero in that film. I can understand his trepidation now.
Alexander Skarsgård is in fact Swedish, so Scandinavian, yes, good call. Mm-hmm. Does anybody wish you could go back in time and get a young James Spader for this?
Yes.
I just think that would be so fantastic.
Well, he did this.
Secretary.
He did this role in Secretary with Maggie Gyllenhaal. So he's done. I mean, it's the same idea. And that was a great, again, it was ahead of its time, as James Spader often is.
Yeah.
So it's, 2013, we pushed the envelope a little further.
Any thoughts on Jamie Dornan or Scott Eastwood at all? I think Jamie Dornan looks like a child, and it's really hard to comprehend him in such a literally dominant role.
Does everybody know that Scott Eastwood is Clint Eastwood's son?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and he also kind of looks like a moron frat boy. I don't know why, but I don't think that's quite right for the role either.
Yeah, it's not going to advance his career.
I've never read this book. I have really strong opinions about this for no apparent reason.
No, I like it. It's good. It's important.
You claim not to have read this book.
I have not.
This is like the Spice Girls. No, everyone's like, no, I don't listen to them, but everyone had their record. This is the same thing. It's the exact same thing.
70 million people at least read the book.
Yeah, so the odds of one of you four.
None of us.
Yeah, right.
Sure. All right. So we'll move on now to our preview review for the Grand Budapest Hotel. There are certain directors that, as film lovers, we all just by law have to see the movies they put out, and I think we'd put Wes Anderson squarely in that category.
Yes, we would, probably so.
He's the writer-director behind The Royal Tenenbaums, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, Fantastic Mr. Fox,
yes,
and last year's Moonrise Kingdom. He's always a bit secretive with his projects, but we now finally have the first trailer for his newest film, The Grand Budapest Hotel. So it's another comedy-drama starring Ralph Fiennes as a well-known and well-beloved concierge at a hotel in the 1920s who takes on a protege. And basically, every person who's ever been nominated for an Academy Award is in the cast. We have Bill Murray, Jeff Goldblum, Edward Norton, Jude Law, Harvey Keitel. It goes on and on. Jill, I believe Moonrise Kingdom made it on your top five list of 2012, so I'll let you kick things off.
Also maybe,
what do you think? You excited?
Also, maybe to make it up for me for making me kick
yes,
the last
also
one
also
off.
For that. Yep.
There's no, less I'm, dominatrix in this one.
Yeah.
I am really excited about this movie. I thoroughly enjoyed Moonrise Kingdom. I thought it was great. Fantastic Mr. Fox. I thought it was great. I mean, this is, I think, especially the second half of Wes Anderson's career, I've been a really big fan of. And this trailer really feels like it fits right into that sweet spot that he's found the last couple of films. I love the character development. I love the mystery. I love the romance. I mean, just so interesting. I have a couple of fears from the trailer. Did they reveal too much? And then there's parts of it that seem a little familiar, like some of the chase scenes. But there's enough in this movie that feels new that I think it's going to be awesome.
Fox, what sense do you get?
Well, I would like to comment on what Jill said about the trailer revealing too much. There are a lot of quick cuts here. And I believe that if you were to take the trailer and slow it down and try to put things in order in terms of chronology, you could almost figure out what happens in this film. But where's the fun in that? I think that what is enjoyable about this trailer is you could see it once. And if you just only see the trailer one time, you know there's lots of great things, but you're not going to remember all of it. But all you're going to remember is the sensation of knowing there are lots of great things to come. Yeah. It goes so fast and it introduces each character so quickly that I think you get the sense that you know there's wonder to be found in this film. But unless you're really going to dissect it, I don't think you're going to remember all the little sequences.
Chris, do you feel like you got a good sense of plot from the trailer?
You know, I definitely got the broad strokes of it. Jill had this on the had Moonrise Kingdom, I'm sorry, on the top five of 2012. I had Moonrise Kingdom on my number one most overrated movie of 2012.
Right, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I feel like Wes Anderson is just drilling deeper and deeper and deeper into this well of very particular visual style and telling some kind of a weird, quirky story in that. But I just feel like I already know what's coming. You know, even with just the few plot beats we got from this trailer, I feel like I could write this movie myself.
Wow.
And that doesn't mean it's not going to be fun to watch, but I just can't make myself be looking as forward to this as I know many of you are.
It's interesting that you bring up the visual style because each of Wes Anderson's films, especially the last four or five, have such a strong visual style and color palette, particularly that it's just uniform throughout the entire picture. And I kind of got the sense from the trailer that this is a little bit more of an open world.
I agree.
It's a little bit less of a closed, small microcosm of what's going on.
I think we're going to get those small microcosms. I think what's going to happen is we're going to see almost three films within one. I think that's the reason for the aspect ratio differences. I think at each time period is going to be its own color palette, its own aspect ratio, and sort of him playing in these mini worlds, which I think is kind of a clever idea. And I hope
so. For the listeners, and maybe a little for me, remind me what aspect ratios are.
Aspect ratios are the way you literally frame what you see. So when you think of today, widescreen being 16:9 ratio. Originally, older TVs were 4:3. And it's basically the film you put into your camera to shoot your picture. And so you can do that and then play with those images a little bit differently, stretching them or squeezing them on the screen because all theaters are widescreen now.
Right. But you can show, if they're wide enough, you can show it any version of narrowness
within
that.
Yeah.
In fact, Wes Anderson has, Exactly. Wes Anderson has often wanted to play with aspect ratio before. I know he said when he was filming the Royal Tenenbaums, he really considered shooting that in 4:3 because he liked the verticalness or verticality of the frame. Mm-hmm. And especially given the way that that house was sort of the architecture there, it would have made for some interesting shots.
Well, that's why I think this film is going to be really interesting to watch as film lovers, you know, not just for the characterization, which I think he's obviously great at, and the quirky script, but also the way he actually chooses to film his objects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's also interesting to look at all the actors that are in this, and I love that they spend the last 10 seconds of the trailer basically flying through a list of all the amazing things.
You can't even read their names.
No, it's kind of incredible. So, and many of them are ones we've seen in Wes Anderson stuff before, mm-hmm. but some of them, especially ones in key roles like Ralph Fiennes, are not particularly associated with their comedy roles.
I think I thought Voldemort was hilarious.
Exactly. So do we think Ralph Fiennes is going to be able to pull off a lead in a comic movie?
I absolutely do. He you get a lot of footage of him in trailer because he really is the main character. And he doesn't seem like he has having any trouble pulling off this role.
No.
And I think part of that is because it's not just he's not a straight up funny man. Like, this is a very kind of sarcastic and dark and, you know, kind of twisty comedy.
And I think that's why they focus on Fiennes in this trailer. We already have seen that, you know, Bill Murray is a master at it. Jeff Goldblum is a master at it. Even from Moonrise Kingdom, I thought Edward Norton showed off that he has really good comedic timing. So they're focusing on the person that you don't think should have that ability. And they show that he does.
But what we do know is that he's an exceptional actor.
Without question.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so if you had to put a grade on the trailer, what would it be? Fox?
I'm going to go with an A. I don't want to see any more footage, but I absolutely want to see the movie after seeing the trailer.
Ditto for me, an A.
Yeah, even though I'm looking forward to it less, I think A is totally fair for the trailer.
Wow, it was a good trailer.
Naturally.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a fun trailer.
I'm impressed by Chris's grade.
And naturally, I would come in slightly beneath the rest of you with an A-.
There you go.
Excellent.
That's about how we usually break up. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops as we get closer to the release date, which is March 7th, 2014. But now we're turning to a brand new segment on Geek Scholars Movie News, which is movie trivia, but with our listeners calling in to be the contestants. Every now and then, we're going to find contestants who want to try their luck at geeky movie trivia in order to take a shot at our prize, which is a retrospective review of any movie of their choosing that we'll do on a later show. So let's kick this thing off, Fox. Do you want to get our first contestant on the line?
Sure thing.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Daniel from Franklin, Tennessee.
Excellent. And tell me, Daniel, what are some of your all-time favorite movies?
If I only had to pick a couple, I love the Coen brothers' Raising Arizona. When Harry Met Sally, I can watch over and over again and never get sick of it. And for those kind of artsy times, you gotta love Amelie.
Okay, those are all excellent picks. Welcome to Geek Scholars Movie News Trivia. I'm gonna start out by giving you three movies to choose to answer trivia about, and these are your choices: The Goonies, 1985. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, 1986, or Fargo in 1996. Which one would you like?
Let's go Fargo.
Okay, Fargo. Are you ready to play?
I certainly hope so.
Okay, here is your first question. A large portion of Fargo takes place in which U.S. state? Is it A, Alaska, B, Vermont, C, Canada, D, Minnesota, or E, Minnesota?
Clearly E, Minnesota.
That is correct, E, Minnesota. For your second question, one of the leads of Fargo is Frances McDormand, who won an Academy Award for her portrayal of Margie Gunderson. And in Fargo, what is Margie's profession?
She's one of the police officers and also exceedingly pregnant.
That is correct. She is a pregnant police officer. I like the extra description you gave there. Number three. In Fargo, Peter Stormare and Steve Buscemi play a pair of sleazy kidnappers. However, their partnership concludes after the big guy attacks the little funny-looking guy with an axe and subsequently disposes of the body by throwing it into what?
A chipper vac or a wood chipper.
That is correct, a wood chipper. And I should add, too, if people want to see the actual wood chipper used in the film, it is on display at the Fargo-Moorhead Visitor Center, so go check that out. Number four. Fargo is not entirely based on a true story, as some people believe, but it was inspired by some actual events. The movie, however, did garner a Best Original Screenplay Academy Award for the two people who wrote it as well as directed. What famous duo am I referring to?
The Coen brothers.
Yes, that is correct. The Coen brothers, who would go on to do True Grit, No Country for Old Men, and the upcoming Inside Llewyn Davis. Number five, and your final question, Daniel. Fargo was actually filmed just down the road from another cult classic, which came from writer-director Kevin Smith in 1996. What film was Mr. Smith shooting?
Dogma?
That is a good guess, but no, unfortunately, the answer is Mallrats. He was filming it down at an abandoned flea market mall that was going to be shut down. Interestingly, Kevin Smith said he heard about the movie and reportedly told his crew the movie sounded so weird, nothing could possibly ever come of it. But Daniel, you did very well. You got 4 out of 5 correct.
Ah, wahoo!
Congratulations, you win our prize, which means the crew of Geek Scholars Movie News will do a retrospective review of any movie of your choosing. So which movie would you like?
I've always loved The Professional.
Oh, The Professional.
So if you wouldn't mind seeing if that holds up over the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, very young. Natalie Portman in that, sure.
I would be exceedingly happy on some upcoming show.
That sounds excellent. We will get right on it. And thanks for playing.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Congratulations to Daniel. We'll get started on a review of The Professional, which will air on an upcoming show. If you'd like to play Geek Scholars Movie News Trivia, send an email to mail@geekscholars.com with the subject line Trivia, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible to try to schedule you to be on the show. For now, though, let's check out what's coming to the box office this weekend. Jill, what do we have in wide release?
So October 25th is an oddly quiet weekend. I've got The Counselor, a crime drama about a lawyer who gets in over his head when he gets involved with drug trafficking. That stars Michael Fassbender, Brad Pitt, and Cameron Diaz and is rated R.
Surprisingly.
And on the other side of things, Bad Grandpa, which is an extension of the Jackass series. Johnny Knoxville's dressing up like an old man and doing sort of absurd things with unaware real people watching. And that's shockingly also rated R. Chris, anything to add in limited release?
Yeah, we've got one movie coming out that's gotten a lot of buzz and a lot of acclaim at film festivals. That is Blue is the Warmest Color. This is a French movie about a teenage girl experiencing her first romantic relationship with another woman. This is, I should note, however, rated NC-17.
Yes.
This is for adults only, and it is about 3 hours long. So I think it'll be a real treat to watch.
A lot
but
of
it
time
will be...
to explore those relationships.
Yeah.
God,
so there you
the
go.
French.
If that's your kind of thing, it is opening in limited release.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Oh, my goodness.
We will wrap things up with a few quickie news items, shall we? Chris Pine, who plays Captain Kirk in the new Star Trek movies, will play one of the awful employers in Horrible Bosses 2. Is this a good pick?
I'm going to go no.
Really?
Is my short answer. Yeah.
You just want him in 50 Shades of Grey?
Oh, goodness.
Sorry.
I'm just going to ignore that. I really suspect that the magic they had in the first Horrible Bosses movie is just not going to be there for Horrible Bosses 2. I don't think that they're going to get it together. And I like Chris Pine a lot, and I don't really want to see him in something that I think is going to be a little bit of a flop.
Fair enough. Okay, Fox. Dwayne The Rock Johnson will star as a rugged helicopter pilot in an earthquake-themed action disaster film entitled San Andreas. Finally a good Man Against Nature film?
They are all
not
good
so much?
Man Against Nature films, I have you know. No, to be fair, The Rock is perfect for this kind of movie, and I would absolutely see it. I think it's a great pick.
I love earthquake movies.
There you go.
Okay.
I'm
alone fact about
Jill. Surprised to hear you say that, Fox.
All right, last one, Chris. Despite a poor domestic reception, Pacific Rim has raked in $400 million worldwide, so director Guillermo del Toro says he's writing a sequel. Do you think we'll ever see it?
Absolutely.
Good.
We will see this movie. I know he's been thinking about this for even since he was doing the original movie.
Absolutely.
And if he managed to get Hellboy 2 made, despite all odds, this will absolutely happen.
And this is so his pet project. I mean,
totally.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this week's show. As always, we encourage you to subscribe to the Geek Scholars Movie News podcast on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to give us a review. Thank you very much. And visit our website, geekscholars.com. Also, check out our brand new channel on YouTube. Just search for Geek Scholars.
We also love hearing from our listeners, so write to us at mail@geekscholars.com or leave us a comment on our Facebook site. We do try to answer every single piece of mail we get, so if you send us something, we're going to get back to you ASAP. We also encourage all of our listeners to check out EclipseMagazine.com, another great entertainment website, and the music of the 440 Alliance, who graciously allow us to use their music on our podcast. Finally, take that feedback survey on our website to make the podcast even more glorious than it already is. Until next week, this is Fox.
And Lauren.
And Chris.
And Jill saying, why do you consider me your enemy? Because your girlfriend stabbed me in the back with lefty scissors.
they'll do that.
Have a good week, everybody.
Best outtake.
God. So, Jill, start us off with a...
Good luck with this, Jill. She actually has been rehearsing this all day, so I can't wait to see. I cannot wait to see.
That's
what
gonna
happens.
Make it so much easier.
No, I don't think. Okay. Can you edit that out? Because that I do not want to get into on the show. Because your girlfriend stabbing you in the back with left scissors. Oh, I think it's lefty scissors. Shoot, left scissors. Shit.
Wow.
Double check it.